What I was going to do is I have a few slides, just want to talk about the framework, what it is, why it's useful, and then I kind of just wanted to like do some demo and show you. One of the great things about Ruby on Rails is that you can like walk into a seminar room and actually like, I could build one of your projects in like 30 minutes, and that's what we're going to do. We're probably going to use Blake's project. But you know, it's like, I mean, like the reality is I'll talk about how, you know, to get to be thinking about what you guys are doing in terms of the Model View Controller framework, which is what they use, and I'll try to explain what that is. And I think the best way to do that is to kind of contextualize it by talking about a real project, and we'll implement some stuff. So, I mean, do we want to shoot for like an hour and a half? Is that too long? Is that... You want to just see how we go? All right, cool. So... This is my Rails presentation. I made these slides this summer from a similar presentation. It's not a bad presentation. All right, cool. So is it cool that I just sit down like this? I'm lazy. I like to normally walk around, but whatever. So this is Tim O'Reilly's words. Ruby on Rails is a breakthrough in lowering the barriers of entry to programming. He makes an emphasis saying that it lets you develop stuff a lot faster. I think this is true. I started using Rails in the middle of 2006. I kind of have run away from everything else and stopped looking back. Because literally, I have kind of a, you know, web-based business. I've done a lot of web consulting, and this lets me do things faster. Faster means you make more money, you make your clients happier, you make yourself happier, your products get better. So I'm arguing it from a business standpoint, but it's also sweet for projects, because it means your project will be better, you'll get it done faster, all that kind of stuff. Cool. So, whoa, how'd that, never seen that before. What's going on? All right, cool. So we have an agenda. The agenda starts with what is Ruby on Rails, what is Ruby, why Ruby on Rails. Then we're going to do a demo, you know, talk through a project or a couple different projects and talk about how maybe you would structure that. Then we'll do questions. And yeah. So what is Rails? Rails is a web application framework. Basically, the idea behind Ruby on Rails is that if you think about it, when you get down to like the heart and the guts of it, like, web applications all share a lot of common needs and a lot of common requirements, and it turns out that you can generalize most of what people end up building for web applications into kind of a framework that deals with a lot of these common things for you. And the advantage of using something like Ruby on Rails over building this out yourself is that once you learn the framework, it kind of means you can jump into any application that's written using Rails and kind of like rock with it and like kind of be able to really quickly figure out what's going on and how things work. I worked for a startup company in 2005. We had written kind of our own framework in PHP, put a lot of effort into it. We found that when we hired new employees, it would take them a month to 2 months to kind of get up to speed with what we were doing. Now they switched to Rails. You can literally hire a new person, bring them in, and have them start being productive on day one because the framework is kind of constant across the entire world. What that also means is that there's a lot more like sharing that goes on. Somebody can write a piece of code and then publish it, and then everyone else can start using that in their projects. For example, I don't know if you guys know what a cross-site request forgery is. So it's kind of like a web attack where you can attack. It's like a certain class of attack against web applications. Some guy wrote a Ruby on Rails plugin that just protects you from CSRF. If you had a Rails app, all you have to do is install the plugin. You're good. Like, you're totally safe. Whereas other companies were spending, you know, like 100 hours like securing their sites. You guys just, you know, Rails people were just like, install plugin, done. And that's really cool, right? If you roll your own framework, you have to worry about all these little issues that come up. When you use something that's already kind of existing and that has a big community around it, you get to really like leverage that kind of stuff. So I thought this was clever. I changed only the last word to web application template. So one of the really cool things about Rails, and they're getting away from this now, but it's like really at the heart of it, is that Rails will actually generate your web app for you. Kind of. So if you think about it, almost everything can be thought of in terms of the basic four operations, like which is create, read, update, destroy. They call it CRUD. And so the idea is, like, if you're building a shuttle schedule, right, you need to, like, add shuttle stops, edit them, delete them, and look at them, right? Same thing with, like, a queue guide. You need to add new courses, look at them, delete them, edit them. And, like, you can think of that. You can think of almost every application in terms of, like, the CRUD operations. And that's exactly what Rails does. And it generates code kind of based on that. And so I'm going to kind of like talk at a high level during the slides. And I think you'll get a better idea of actually how it kind of works under the hood when we actually do like the demo. The other thing is that it provides is infrastructure. So you guys have done the PHP assignments, all of you pretty much, more or less, no? Yeah? Okay. So as you know, like as you guys have like seen, PHP is really cool. It kind of gets you right into the heart of the website. And there's a lot of stuff that it kind of supports natively, but there's a lot of stuff that it kind of doesn't that you kind of wish it did. For example, ability to like set, like it supports setting and managing sessions, but it's not great. Rails has like great support for managing sessions. Rails has great support for setting and retrieving cookies, you know, like displaying messages back and forth to users. All these kinds of things that just every web app needs is just done for you. And it also provides all kinds of cool infrastructure for plugging into web services, you know, doing your screen scraping from other services. That's all covered in the infrastructure. And it's also open source, so that's good. I guess you guys know why that's good. So the kind of the core of Rails, and this is what sets it apart from PHP and the other kind of web stuff most of you guys have probably done, is there are, well, I'm going to skip this slide for 1 second. There are two main fundamental premises of Rails, and this is like, these are like the core tenets that we just love. DRY, don't repeat yourself. There should never be a piece of code that looks similar to another piece of code. Like, if you guys take, normally, like, if you, you know, if you build a website and you have like two web pages, like each of them have the same like header, right? The Rails way is to take that header, stick it into its own file, and that way you don't ever have it repeated in two pages, right, as far as the code. The idea is anything that looks like, anything that seems like it might be useful in more than one situation, we want to push that into the framework so that people aren't repeating effort building it twice, you know, or building it. So that's the one, like, one core tenet. The other one is convention over configuration. I don't know how many of you guys, if any of you guys have used Java or any of these, like, more enterprise-y kind of languages. But basically the idea behind Java and ASP and a lot of these like really like, you know, that have big names and big money behind them. Come on in. Hope you didn't have too much trouble swiping in or whatever. The idea is Rails tries to be an opinionated framework, which means that the people who run it have really strong opinions about certain things, and they just make a lot of decisions about how stuff works. And with that, and the general idea, and you'll see how this comes out as we do the demo, but there are a lot of things about Rails that are just the way they are because they are the way they are. And you might say, yeah, there's another equally good way to do this. And they say, well, that's fine, but don't do it. And the advantage to convention over configuration is the same thing I was talking about before, which is you hire a new guy, he automatically knows how everything works because there's only one way to do something. And whether it's the best way or not, it's the way. And we think there's value in that. So the main like programming kind of thing is model view controller. And I'm going to jump over to the board here because we'll do a little interactive section. So the idea behind model view controller is when you guys are doing your PHP stuff, each you know file of source code more or less represented one web page, right? It was almost like the way PHP is kind of presented at first, and you don't have to think about it this way, but it's almost like each file represents a web page, and then you can like throw your interactive stuff in there. Rails does not work like that at all. Rails is the idea behind Rails is you separate things out completely into model, controller, view. It actually kind of flows like that, but they say MVC because it's like a cuter sounding acronym. I don't really know. So the idea behind this is that, is anyone familiar with model view controller? No? Okay. So model view controller is a software architecture kind of idea that got started a good while ago, 10 or 15 years ago. But Rails is like the first project to bring it to web development. It also applies to GUI development and game development and all kinds of other stuff. It's starting to hit the prime time. But the idea is that we want to draw firm separation. This marker sucks. Between, there's like three core parts to your app, right? You've got the data, you've got actions on that data, and you've got views. Okay? So the view aspect is like the website. It's like, you know, you go on, you have some buttons, you have some links, you have web pages and stuff that do different things. That's kind of like the view. The model is the data itself. And an example would be in your shuttle service, like the shuttle routes, the list of the shuttles, the shuttles timetables, all those kind of stuff are data, they're models. And the controller is the interaction between the two. So for example, if you had a web page that lets you add a new shuttle, the way that you would implement that is you would create the view for it, which is, you know, the actual interface that has all the fields and like the UI and stuff for adding this new route. The controller is the code that actually takes that input, creates a new model, and then sends response back to the view. And you'll see that again in the demo, but that's kind of the fundamental division. And so the way that this actually plays out in your source code is for each different type of data you have, that's its own source code file. And you actually have code that relates to, for example, a shuttle route. Like there are operations that can happen on a shuttle route. Like you can say, give me all the stops, or give me the next time, or those kinds of things. And the idea behind separating this stuff out, right, is like, let's take the shuttle example. So, you know, it started out as an application that ran in the shell, like it ran on the Unix shell in the terminal, right? And then they decided, we're going to write a web page for it. Well, they basically had to write everything from scratch because they had all their, you know, all this crap was interleaved in their original code, and so they had to more or less do it from scratch. The idea behind separating out the model view controller is if you come around and say, all right, we actually want to write an iPhone version of our site. Theoretically, the only thing you should have to rewrite is the view, right? Because all the data is the same, all the operations are the same. You should just be rewriting literally the way the display gets rendered. And in practice, that's fantastic. And what this also means is, I don't like how CS50 doesn't really put an emphasis on this, but testing. If you ever, you know, are doing these kinds of things kind of for real, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the fact that, like, oftentimes you'll make one change and it'll break something totally unrelated. Happens to me, happens to everyone. Software, what people are basically do in industry is they write automated tests. You know, tests, like, they literally write programs that'll go out and, like, try to add a route and then check to see that it got added. Or, you know, try to view routes and try to make sure, you know, check to see that it makes that it gave you back the right ones. And by separating these things out, it allows you to write your tests at a much more granular level. You know, with PHP, if I wanted to write a test to test that my PHP script is working properly, I would essentially run the page and check to make sure the result came back correctly. But if it didn't, I would have no idea what broke. I wouldn't know if it's my database that's my database is down, or my page renderer is down, or I'm just making some sort of logic error somewhere. But by doing this, you can separate out your tests also. And that's all the high-level overview I want to give you on that for right now. By the way, stop me with questions, like yell at me, those kinds of things. That was test-driven development. Ruby, cool. So how many of you have used the Ruby language before? Nobody. All right, anyone Python? Any Python? Any Perl, C++, C#, anything like that? Okay. It might come as a shock to you that I think Ruby is the best programming language in the world. It was developed in 1996 by a Japanese guy whose name I can't pronounce, so I won't try. It's like something Matsumoto. I don't really know. So basically the idea behind Ruby is, any of you guys familiar with the Lisp programming language? No? The idea behind Ruby, right, is they took the best ideas from all the programming languages and kind of put them together into one beautiful language that tries to be as simple and as powerful as possible at the same time. I don't really want to turn this seminar into like a Ruby tutorial, but I will show you. I will break out of this and show you something really quick that's cool that you guys should do at home instantly. We'll do this in a second. If you Google Try Ruby, there's this website that was made by this guy in Boston called tryruby.com or tryruby.hobix.com. So Ruby is really cool in that it's an interpreted language, which means that you don't actually compile it. It kind of does its compilation on the fly, which means that you can do something really cool, like you can run it in the browser. Oops, I don't remember that. How do I do this? Help. Oh, type help to start it out. So this is a really cool like tutorial that you can go through that will actually like essentially teach you the basics of Ruby, and I recommend that you do it. It's actually pretty intuitive, pretty straightforward. In fact, let's just go through this. So, you know, as you might expect, Ruby can do math. Just like C, you know, Ruby can do, Ruby can hold strings. It has all the kind of basic data types. Here's the, like, fun stuff. So Ruby is something called object-oriented. Does anybody know what that means? You want to take a shot at explaining it, or do you want me to explain it? Okay, so the idea behind Ruby is that, so like in C, right, you have functions, right? And the way you call a function is you do the function, and then you pass it in some arguments. And that gives you, like, a return value, right? The idea behind Ruby is that, although you still can do that, what we actually think makes more sense as far as, like, a programming model is to actually think about everything as an object and then perform operations on that object. And I'm not going to be able to teach you the whole, like, theoretical foundations for this in 1 hour, because that's what CS51 does, and you should all take CS51. But basically the idea is, so here we have the word Jimmy, and we're going to do Jimmy.reverse, and we get yimmy. So what that basically is the equivalent of in C is calling a function called reverse on the input of Jimmy, right? But it actually, we're just thinking about it kind of backwards. We're saying we're calling the reverse function on Jimmy. That's kind of just the way that Ruby works. You could also do like Jimmy.length, gives you the length. You can do Jimmy times 5, and that gives you Jimmy, 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 Jimmy. So one of the crazy things about Ruby is that it supports a lot of seemingly silly things. You can try 40.reverse, and it gives you, well, that's stupid. You can't reverse the number 40. it's like, duh, it doesn't make any sense. So I guess kind of what that means is Ruby is a dynamically typed language, which means rather than declaring your variables as like int or char or long or whatever, you don't do that at all. It just, at any point, it figures out if what you're trying to do makes sense on the like data type that you're doing it to. And if it doesn't, it'll throw an error. And if it does, it'll just do it. And this is really cool because it means that you never have to worry about, you know, like, crap, I'm putting a variable too big in my integer. It really needs to be a long. It also means you don't have to worry about, like, figuring out how big your chars need to be. Like, you don't have to think about that. It just kind of does it for you. You don't ever have to allocate memory. It does that for you. You don't have to free your memory. It does that for you in a pretty intelligent way. So here's like, what they basically say here is there's a method called 2s, which is converts a number to a string or converts anything to a string. So that, of course, gives the reasonable answer. Anyway, I don't want to like do this for you because you guys can go do it yourself. Apparently CS50 students this year are very bright and they've learned how to teach themselves anything. That's what your professor tells me. So, you know, you'll see the syntax as I'm using it, and I think you'll find it, like, fairly simple. I'm going to send you guys, after this, a link with kind of, like, a PDF. I'm going to send you a link to, like, the Canonical Rails book, which is called Agile Web Development with Rails, which will teach you everything you need to know about the syntax, and you can read that in a day. The book itself costs about $20, but you all should buy the book. Cool. Anyway, so going back... the next slide says huge buzz, and here's part of why I say that. This is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, it's the TOV Programming Community Index. I built this slideshow in July 2007. It ranks the programming languages. Ruby has now passed JavaScript in importance and is here, about to overtake Python, and we suspect that will happen very soon. These big green arrows mean that it's gaining popularity faster than any programming language has ever gained popularity. So you don't have to take my word for it. You can let the chart speak for itself. But I think the reality of it is that people are discovering this and deciding, like, wow, I'm doing my work faster. All right, so why Ruby on Rails for CS50 final projects? Well, it's kind of a good question, right? You guys have been doing C more or less the whole semester. Is that pretty fair? So you say, it's taking a big risk to jump into a new language for my final project. I think that's true. At the same time, I think it'll make your final project a lot better. More or less, out of all of you, I don't think any of you like mentioned a project idea that would actually be really well implemented in C. Like, you all are trying to do like interactive things that have a lot of users, that have a lot of content, that have a lot of data. I mean, granted, you could do it in C, right? But I don't think it would be the experience that your users want. I don't think it's the time that you want to spend. And I think this is intuitive enough that you can learn it. So at this point, we're going to do a demo. And we're going to just talk about some of the projects. Like, do any of you guys like want me to like just kind of talk about your project for a little bit and talk about how maybe that would work with Rails? Or do you want me to just show a more general example of how you would even go about doing anything? In fact, should we do that first? All right, let's talk about how Rails just like works, the nuts and bolts of it. So in the links that I send you, I will let you know how to install it on your computer. There's in the book, it tells you how to do that. There's websites that tell you how to do that. Okay, that's a very good question. Okay, so Rails is a very new technology. Okay, no, this is a good question. So basically, there's a couple things you have to do. Ruby itself is a programming language. Okay. Let me make sure I define the difference. Ruby is a programming language, just like C, just like Python. You can do anything with it. You can use Ruby to build console apps. You can use it to build servers. You can use it to build anything that you could build with C. That's Ruby. And then Rails is a framework that uses Ruby to build web applications. So just to kind of be clear for that. So I use Ruby for other things. The reason it's getting popular right now is because Rails is awesome and everyone's using it for web applications. So basically the things you have to install Ruby, which is just like installing a C compiler or just like installing any other developer tool on your machine. If you have Leopard, you have Ruby and Rails already installed on your machine because Apple is awesome. If you have Tiger, you have Ruby installed, and you can get Rails fairly easily. If you have Windows, you gotta start from scratch. But that's not entirely true. For Windows, there's a program called Instant Rails, which is a one-click installer for Windows. I don't really want to get into all the platform differences right now. But basically the idea is once you get it installed, it works the same everywhere. And the other thing that's important to your question is, all right, once I get this thing done, how do I publish it to the web? And so Rails is also a fairly new technology as far as publishing goes. And it requires because it kind of turns the whole like way we think about web pages kind of on its side, it doesn't necessarily work with all web hosts. Because a lot of web hosts have this idea that, you know, websites are just a bunch of HTML files and they go in a folder and I just set my stuff up to look in your folder. Whereas the way Rails works is it's actually a program that's running all the time serving web requests. And you'll see why, because one page in Rails is not just like one self-contained unit, because what Rails does is supports a lot of cool things like Ajax and other things that kind of turn the definition of what is a page kind of on its side. So as far as actually publishing it goes, there are a lot of like web hosts that support Rails. There are a lot of like hacky ways to support it on other things. But let's just talk about like, let's just go through the process of starting a new project. So I just have a terminal here. You guys using Windows will just use the Windows command prompt. Ruby is completely cross-platform. It also works on MS-DOS. It's one of the very few modern programming languages to fully support MS-DOS with all of its features. And they're proud of that, and they're going to keep doing that for a while. Anyway, so we're just going to start the Rails. We're going to create a project and call it CS50 Demo Project. Literally, the way you create a new project is you just type the word Rails, and then you type the name of the project. And it says, okay, I'm creating all these files for you. So it creates this application skeleton for you that has everything you need in it to run a web application. And we will open that up in our text editor here. I'm using TextMate, which I think is a really cool source code editor. For those of you using Mac, you should get TextMate. You can use anything, but I'm a big fan of TextMate. Those of you using PC, you can also use anything. You can use Vim or Emacs or whatever you guys have been training on. Those both work very well with Ruby. There's another editor called Aptana that's very popular with Java that also works with Rails. These are kind of personal preference things, and you can find so much about it and more in the book. But anyway, so what it actually does is it creates this little directory structure for you. And the idea is we separate out our source code and all of our source code for our application lives in the app folder. And we have controllers, models, and views, which we'll see. Helpers you can kind of ignore for right now. Components you can ignore. Config, this is where our configuration goes. These are the kinds of things it's like, all right, I got this web application. This is like one of the things that PHP doesn't give you natively, for example. If you're running PHP, there's some configuration stuff you got to have, right? Like the username and password for your database. In PHP, you just stick that in the same file as your web page. Rails comes along and says, that doesn't make sense. It's not a web page. It's configuration. It belongs somewhere else. It belongs in the configuration folder. Same thing with DB. This is database. This is where you keep everything related to your database. Documentation for your app. You get this nice README for app, which says, you should put stuff in this README. So you can do that. It can't read your mind. Lib, you can kind of ignore. Log, that's where all your logs go. So again, one of the cool things Rails does is it consolidates all your logging in a very intelligent way. It logs everything very, very well. If there's ever a failure in your application, it will not only just tell you the line number where the failure was, like PHP, but it'll actually tell you what function called that, and what function called that, and what function called that. So it'll actually give you like what's called a stack trace or a back trace of exactly what happened when your application crashed. So debugging, super easy. And you get this public folder, which kind of looks a little more like what you guys might expect from a website. It has some HTML files in it, has some images in it. And this is where you put things like images and just like non-interactive content. That just gets made available to the web, just like a regular website. How many of you guys did web development at all before the last problem set? If I'm going too fast, all right, maybe I need to slow down.
So in the view part of this, are we still writing files in HTML?
Yes. Yes, you will use HTML for the views. You will use Ruby code for the models and controllers.
Okay.
That's correct. All right, so script just gives you some scripts. We're not going to worry about that. Test is where, you know how I was talking about automated tests for everything? That's where they go. Temp is just temporary stuff, and vendor is where you install plugins. Anyway, most of that, the only thing that's really relevant here is the app and the config folder. So you guys all have MySQL experience at this point? Okay, so Rails assumes you're using some sort of database. Otherwise, why are you building an application? Like, all applications have data. For simplicity, we're going to use MySQL today because you guys have all used it. Any of you guys use this, like the Mac MySQL client? No? Okay. How did they have you guys using MySQL? Did they have you writing SQL like at the console or? PHP MyAdmin? Okay, so I'll use that today. So it's more stick with what you guys know. What do you guys think of PHP MyAdmin? Okay. Anyway, so I prefer the Mac client, but we'll use this too because it's all the same. So you guys are familiar with this and all that stuff? Great. That's fantastic. We'll make the font smaller. You still see that? Yeah. All right, cool. So the idea behind Rails is you're going to create this database for your application, just like you did for the other thing that you made. So I just went ahead and created a database, called CS50. I'm going to come back to my Rails app. I'm going to come into the config folder. There's a little thing called database.yml that generates there. And I want to gloss over the details here. But anyway, it's just a config file. You put in the configuration stuff. Every Rails config file in the world looks exactly like this one. It's part of the convention over configuration stuff. So I just created this database. I'm putting in the username, putting in the password. I'm going to hit save and close that file. And now I'm going to start up our server here by typing script/server -d, which means launch it into the background. Anyway, that's not important. So we hit up our website. Server just runs on your local machine at port 3000. And again, all the details behind this are in the book. And you get welcome aboard. You're riding the Rails. We've got our website. That was like, 30 seconds? And we've got a working website so far that looks pretty cool. Has a little Ajax drop-down thing there that gives you details. Let's launch into developing something cool. Since everybody's doing like different things, I propose we start and build a little blog. We'll spend like 15 minutes and build a blog. So let's do some brainstorming over here with a blog. What kinds of data does a blog have? Anybody?
Posts.
That's true. Blogs have... Do we have better markers? Yeah, let's see. Let's see if this black one works. Oh, that's much better. All right, cool. So we have posts. So, and then date and time information. So that's kind of like... That's kind of like attributes of a post, right? So that those have date, / time. Those also have like subject,
author,
some tags, the body. Cool. Anything else? What else do you find on a blog?
Comments.
Cool. So I'm going to write that as a separate object because comments kind of have some stuff too, right? Because they have date, time, and they also have a body. And I guess, all right, we'll give them author. I don't want to give them subject because this is a blog that doesn't have subjects on its comments. But we could do it. You could put that in there too. All right, what else? Anything else that goes on a blog? What?
Pictures.
Okay, yeah, cool. It's like a photo blog that also has pictures.
Some sort of index.
Some sort of index that,
like
of all the different pages?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not so that's a view, that's not data,
okay.
Right? Okay, so it's good. We'll do that in the view section, but I'm just talking about the data stuff. So we're going to ignore pictures because I don't feel like dealing with that right now. But so these are kind of like two data objects you can think of that are like pretty distinct. You have this post object that has all this like data inside it, and you have a bunch of posts, right? And then you have this like comment object that has all these sorts of data inside it, and then you have a bunch of comments. And then it turns out that on a blog, there's this very special relationship between posts and comments. Anyone want to like render it, guess what that is?
One-to-many relationship.
That's right. So it's called like a one-to-many relationship. I don't know. Did you guys learn about that in your MySQL stuff? Okay.
We really glossed over
SQL. All right, cool. So the idea behind this is typically a post will have a bunch of comments, but every comment belongs to one post, right? So there's like three kind of fundamental types of relationships. You can call it like a one-to-one. Can you see this, by the way? You can have a one-to-many, or you could also have a many-to-many. It turns out that these two are not used that often, but this one is used like all the time. An example of what would be a many-to-many relationship would be like in the QGuide app. Courses have more than one instructor, but instructors have more than one course usually. And the cool thing about these sorts of like association stuff is that Rails thrives on them and will build. And Rails supports these sorts of associations in the framework itself. So it's really, really easy to implement one-to-one, one-to-many, many-to-many, just very natively. So one of the cool things that Rails does on the model layer is Rails says, okay, you've got two objects. One's called post, one's called comment. So there's a convention. Again, because we're doing convention over configuration, that for each object, you're just going to create a MySQL table called the plural version of that object. So Rails is going to expect that if we're building a blog, and we have a post and a comment, that we're going to build a database that has two tables, one called posts, one called comments. We have the S because the Rails authors like to make everything sound like valid English. And because it's a table of more than one, we're calling it posts and comments. You can't do anything else. So let's make them. Let's make some tables called posts and comments. We can. So Rails supports all kinds. This is like a much fancier way of doing this, but we're going to do it for now, just kind of the way you guys are used to, which I assume this is how you guys made tables before. Maybe not using this. Okay, cool. So. The idea behind one of the Rails conventions is that everything gets an ID. And then we're just going to do the rest of the things. So we'll have a date, time, a subject, an author, which we'll just let be text, a tags, and a body. So this all seems like reasonably familiar at this point because you guys have done this SQL stuff. Yes? No? Yeah? Okay. We're just going to make these all text fields. One Rails convention is that if you have a date, time field called created on, it will just set that for you whenever you create something. It's just a convention that's cool. So that's why I'm calling it. That's why I'm calling it created on instead of date time, or whatever. So there's our posts table. And then we're going to create our comments table, just the same way. So is this all? I know I'm going really, really fast, but I just want to like fly through everything so you can see how the framework works. And then I'll entertain specific questions, and then you guys can go through the tutorials on your own and that kind of stuff. So we're going to have comments. Comments also have an ID. I don't know, did you guys like use an ID column in anything that you were building? Okay, so it's called a primary key. The idea is just like you want to have each comment have its own unique number, so just for sanity. One of the Rails conventions is that that's always called ID. Different frameworks use different things. Rails says it's always called ID. And our comments are going to have a body, an author, and then I don't know if you guys did this in your SQL stuff, but we need a way to say, all right, which post is this comment associated with? And it turns out the way we do that is we just create, what is going on? create another column called post ID, and that's just going to be an integer. And the idea is in each comment, it's just going to have the ID number of that post that it goes with. And it turns out that if you set this up correctly, the Rails convention is it's just the name of the other object followed by underbar ID. And if your other object was like, the idea is if you have a two-word object, so if you had like, if you had an object called class evaluation, you would call the object itself class eval, you know, uation. And then when you're referring to it in the SQL, whenever there's a capital letter, that turns into an underbar. So the other things would be like class evaluation ID. And they just do this because SQL likes to be lowercase in certain SQL programs. And in Ruby, class names are supposed to be camel case. But anyway, these are the kinds of things that you'll just pick up really, really quickly. So we've created these two tables. Does that seem pretty like familiar for all you guys? All right, great. So now what we do is we say, now we got to tell Ruby about, or we got to tell our new Rails application about these two tables. And it turns out the way that you do that, the way that you create almost anything new in Rails is you run this script called generate. So you type script generate model, because we're creating a new model. And the model is called post. So we hit that. And what that'll do is that'll create some files for us. It just created a bunch of files. But the only ones that are really important here is inside our models folder, just created post.ruby. So this is a Ruby, this is a model. I kind of want to gloss over the top stuff at the top. But if we just hit save, we can now access all those posts from our Rails application. And we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do script generate model comment. So now we have our comment. All right. So the cool thing about when I was just talking about the one-to-many relationship, the way we tell Rails, like, that's how posts and comments are related, is we literally just say a post has many comments. And now it will know that whenever it loads up a post, it loads up the comments as well, and you can access them really, really easily. And similarly, comments, that belongs to a post. And yeah, you're laughing because you're like, this is not how computing programming is supposed to be. But I say, yes, this is how it's supposed to be. Cool. So now what we need to do is, it's been a long time since I've run this command because I don't actually use it, but only for demos. So this might break. Is we generate what's called a scaffold. And I did it correctly. Good. All right, cool. So script generate scaffold is really cool because that will create you the view in the controller that deals with this object kind of automatically. So I can now go to my web application and type /posts. And I'm now at this really cool page listing posts. And I can do new post. I can create a new post and say, here is my first post. Author Kevin. Tags CS50 is great. Body, this is the body. This is the bod, actually. Hit create, and now that post is in there, right? Let's create another new post, like second post. Also by Kevin, no tags, and body, second post. Cool. So the cool thing about Rails is that I'm actually using Rails right now to add and edit and view this data, right? What this actually did was it generated me a controller called post controller. that actually deals with these actions, and it generated me some views that deal with showing me these actions. So this is HTML with embedded Ruby inside it, which I guess is very similar to PHP. I know you guys have been using PHP. It's kind of exactly the same idea, except that it's much simpler to read and more pretty. So let's make this look like a blog. You know, like if you take a look at this, like this does not look like a blog. This looks like a table of some crap. But you know, let's just make it look like a blog. So let's call it like Kevin's blog. And then just clean this kind of stuff up here. And we'll say, each time we have a new post. Each time we have a new post, we'll just create a header that has the title of that post. So we'll take a look at that. Oops. Kevin's blog. So how many of you guys are familiar with HTML, or at least to the point where I don't feel too bad like flying through this? All right, cool. So we're creating this website. So the idea is, I'm going to kind of back up. If you take a look at the URL here, we have posts/list. The first part of the URL is saying, what controller am I hitting? And the idea is a controller corresponds to a type of object, in this case, a post. And then like the thing after it is called the action. And that corresponds to, like what view am I looking at? And in this case, we're doing a list. We're just looking at it. Because this is a blog, what we'd actually want to do is go in and set post list as like the default view, so that when you just go to the blog itself, that's the page that actually comes up. But the place you implement it would be under posts/list. This guy gets it, I can tell. All right, cool. So this still doesn't really look like a blog. We need to put in like the body. And this is, as you can see, like really straightforward, I think. Okay, cool. So like on PHP how you do open question mark? Mm-hmm. Ruby just uses open percent. There's no reason why. They just decided to use the percent sign. So just imagine it works exactly like PHP, except instead of an open, open bracket question mark, it's open bracket percent. Okay, so I guess you didn't learn this in PHP. This is just a shortcut. This is the same as that. I don't know, did you learn like the echo command in PHP or like print? The equal sign is just an implied way of saying print. If you omitted that, it would just run this without actually printing anything. And then we also want the author. So now we have a pretty legit looking blog, I think. Kind of. It doesn't really look like a blog. You could say like by. You can style this a bit. I know you guys like learned this kind of stuff at least a little bit. There's, all that stuff I was showing you in Ruby, like on the Try Ruby website, that works here. So if we want to reverse the body, you could show post.body.reverse. Thought that's in something else. So the idea is, let's take a look at the controller code that actually pulls that out. Okay, so this is the kind of the basic controller that it renders for you. Don't think about that for right now because it's not important. So these are all the different actions you can perform. You can even avoid thinking about this one. What we're thinking about is list right now. And literally, it literally generates the code for you to pull out all the posts, and it puts it into a variable called posts. And then when we're on the list page, we're literally just iterating through that and saying for each post, render this stuff. Are we over anybody's head yet? I'm a little afraid we're going too fast. No? All right, cool. So let's...
Question.
Yeah.
How does it know how to generate? Like, and you just take a couple things and it
That's right. The idea is, fundamentally, almost all types of data are the same. This is what I was saying before. For almost anything, you need a way to create it, a way to view it, a way to edit it, and a way to delete it. And that's what it generates. It generates list, show, new, create, edit, update, destroy. New is just, it generates the view for, like, before you create something, and then create is the actual action that creates it. And same as edit, edit, like, generates the view to edit something, and then update actually does the update. So, and then, you know, like, so sometimes they don't all make sense, and they're not all relevant to you. Like, for example, on a blog, you might never actually delete a post, so you might just get rid of destroy. We're going to keep it because we think it's cool. But, like, for example, for comments, right? We generated the scaffolding on comments. But, like, we don't really ever need to just a view page for comments because we're actually just going to only view those in the context of a post. So we would just come back and say, you know what, turns out that's gone. Like, we don't need that. You know, we don't ever need to just show one comment, so we can get rid of that. And you can just come in and say delete, 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 delete. So let's talk about some of the, like, really cool features about Rails that makes it, like, buzzworthy and awesome. So let's create a new post. I'm going to create this post, which is pretty weak. I just created a completely blank post, and it makes my blog look bad now because I have, like, nothing by nothing and then just, like, this weird date down here. That's bad. That just looks weird. It's a problem. So one of the cool things about Rails, built-in validation. So if you go back to the model, this is our post model. One of the things you can do in a model is you can say, how does this data need to be validated, right? So, for example, we want to require that people type in a subject. So we do validates presence of subject. So now if I try to create a new post, and I don't put in a subject, I hit create, it's going to say, uh-oh, subject can't be blank. And so Rails literally is stopping me at a framework level from being able to save that. Right, so that's pretty cool. We also really want to validate presence of body and probably author. There's other cool validations, like validates numericality of, validates length of. You want to make sure the subject is at least 10 letters long. You know, you can read about all these in the book. You can also just do validates and then provide your own validation code. But the idea, the cool thing about Rails is, again, this validation is taking place at the model level, which means that if somebody else goes out and writes a new way to add posts, you don't have to trust that person to implement the validation there, like as you would on a web page. On a web page, you're doing all these sorts of code like on every page, right? So if someone creates a new page, and they're doing like a bunch of SQL inserts, like you can't really trust them to do all the validation. Rails tries to centralize that, and so you have no repetition. And that brings up a cool point. When you're in your command line, you can do script/console. Again, one of the great things about Ruby, it's interactive. So I can also create a new post this way, post.create. So it gave me the error. Body can't be blank, author can't be blank. And there we have it. We now have a new post saved from the command line, which is pretty fantastic. And because that I implemented the validation in the model itself, it enforced that validation no matter how I was adding that object. So let's throw in some comments here. You know, we've got my first post. It's post ID number 1. Here is my first post. We're going to create some comments. I'm just going to show you, I guess you guys are familiar with how you do this in PHP MyAdmin. I don't know, like here is a first comment, author Kevin, and then it has post ID number 1. I'll show you how you can add these from Rails later, but for now let's just assume there's a comment in there, I want to view it, right? We're going to make this look a little better because I still think this looks terrible. What makes blogs look cool? Colors, CSS, all right. How should we make it look? I don't know anything about blogs.
Where would you keep all your style sheets?
Well, that's a good question. You know what? Let's make a style sheet. In public, there's a folder called style sheets, turns out, and you keep them in there. It generates one for you called scaffold.css. You can create your own, and it kind of deals with those automatically. It automatically builds that into your HTML when it's building HTML. You can also include your own JavaScript in there, whatnot. So let's, I don't like this font. I don't know if you know this, but like the official font of making websites look cool is called Lucida Grande. See, doesn't that look so much nicer? I don't know, maybe not. You know, we can make our header look really cool. Background. Create your little that stuff. Oh, that's cool. All right, now it looks like a real blog. Oh, so this is the same as this. So basically, whenever you have only, you can, if you specify three, it's the same as, so like this is the same as this. It's just a shortcut way of writing a color. I don't know why it's become popular. Are people so lazy that they can't write three more digits? But yeah, I don't know. It just kind of caught on. So like, this is the same as like OOC. Whatever. I don't know. That's an HTML weirdness. Yeah, cool. So I still want to clean this up. So
we have 5 minutes.
And then we change the tape. Yeah. Do you have extra tapes and stuff?
I do.
Oh, cool. Okay, great. So.
Yeah,
we'll just like finish up making this look cool, and then we'll show the comments. So let's, at this point, I'm just kind of like figuring out things to do. All right, let's make that time not look weird. Did you guys learn about stir f time at any point in C or in PHP? Okay, stir f time exists in both C and PHP, and it works like this. You specify a way to format something, and it formats it. So in this case, %b means full month, %d means day, and %y means year. That's documented. You can read about that. This looks a lot better. Let's like make these smaller. All right. I think that looks like a much better blog. So let's throw some comments in there, right? So I'm just going to create another little header. It says comments. And because we told Ruby that posts have many comments, it is literally able to be smart about this and know that I can literally say post.comments. That's going to be an array of all the comments, just like post is an array of all the posts. So I literally can just loop through my array of comments and say, for each comment, I'm just going to display... Oops, I think this needs to be an in. And now our comments are on the page. You know, it's kind of weird. We're showing the word comments somewhere where we shouldn't. So we can just fix that. If post comments.size is greater than 0. Now we're only showing the comments where it needs to be. So that's kind of like the intro and how you would create a blog. I hope that it's at least like... I hope you're at least like appreciating how simple and straightforward like kind of creating these like kind of dynamic web applications are. Note that you did not, let's note all the things that you did not do. You did not write any SQL. Yes, all this data is getting stored in a SQL database. What's actually happening is Rails is essentially writing SQL for you, kind of behind the scenes. Because again, it turns out like SQL is one of those things, it's a pain in the ass, and it's really the same every time. And so they came along and said, you know what, we're just going to do that for you. We're just going to like take care of that behind the scenes. You did not, like the validation code, just kind of happened for you. All the code to insert it, kind of just gets taken care of for you. The style sheet, started you out with a style sheet, that kind of stuff. So I guess at this point, I just want to figure out what would be the most helpful for you guys? I guess we have... Or do you want to change the tape while we talk about what's more helpful? No, in fact, I run this startup, right, and we're currently looking to expand. We use Ruby on Rails exclusively for our projects. We think it's like integral to our competitive advantage. We think we wouldn't be nearly as good without it. And we're currently, it's like, seriously, the job market for Rails developers is, there is so much more demand than there are good people. Like, it's amazing. Like, if we're currently looking to hire two new guys, and we're gonna have to work really, really hard to find some. So it's a sweet job market to be in if you're a developer, because you're definitely on the right side of the supply-demand equation, which is cool as well. Yeah, what's up?
Why is that you can learn it in a day?
I was kind of lying about you can learn it in a day. No, the reality of it is it takes a very certain kind of person to actually enjoy programming this way, I think. I think a lot of people it's kind of weird, but there are a lot of people that very strongly resist the idea of development should be easy. Like, there are a lot of people that think development should be hard, and development should be done in Java, and it should take four times as long. And it's just amazing, like, how ingrained that is, and I think it's just a lot of institutional inertia. I worked at a company this summer, a very large hedge fund, essentially, and they use Microsoft technologies for everything. And I spent the entire summer persuading them to let me do a project in Ruby, and they were like, no, you have to use Microsoft technologies. And I literally spent 8 weeks doing something I could have done in about a day. And it's just because institutions are slow to change. And because institutions are slow to change, there are less people that are learning this, because you more or less have to learn it by yourself. But I do kind of stand by what I said. Like, if you get good at it, like, I'll hire you. Someone else will hire you. You can negotiate a very good salary. It's, kind of exciting stuff. It's finally kind of growing in the mainstream, too. Like, Rails has only been around since 2004. PHP has been around since, I guess, 1996. Perl has been around since the late 80s. Microsoft stuff has been around for a long time. Java's been around for a long time. So, a lot of companies are, like, wary of switching to it because it's so new. I think that's a stupid reason, but maybe it's, I don't know.
And can I ask, so Ruby is, like, the actual language, and then Rails is sort of this framework that does all that stuff for us behind the scenes?
Right. So Ruby is the programming language itself. So, like this sorts of code, like, this is Ruby code right here. This is what a Ruby file looks like. Like, this is what a Ruby function looks like. I guess I should be more specific. Ruby doesn't use these semicolon or these bracket things. It uses, like, the word end. This is kind of like the equivalent of in C of, like, that. Ruby likes to avoid, like, unnecessary punctuation. So we don't use parentheses. We don't use brackets. We don't specify a return type. If you needed to take an argument, you can do it, like, but if you don't, you just omit that. Ruby is all about, like, just looking very pretty. It's important to me. A lot of people don't like it. Here we have a function called find, and we're passing in the parameter. This looks like very C-like, right? Like, you're calling the function and you're putting parentheses around it. It would work just the same like that. Again, it's just like Ruby is all about just being as easy to read as possible. So we try to do away with the punctuation stuff.
Can we do some session stuff?
Yeah, let's do some session stuff. Like, so you want to, like, build a login page, or what do you think?
Yeah, something like that. I just want to see, like, and how does it deal with security, for example, or, like, stuff like, I don't know.
Sure.
Password security, things like, where does it store this kind of stuff?
Oh, wait, one question before you do that.
Yeah.
You mentioned running it in the command line of your computer. Would this also work on FAST? Just because we're going to need to do a lot of scraping, actually, off of a certain website.
Okay.
Share their data
FAST
with
has
us.
Rails.
Does it? All right. FAST has Rails. So that's you know that for a fact, the server that you're running on has Rails? Awesome. Easy. Super easy. Deploying to Rails, Rails also has this really, really awesome deployment package called Capistrano, which essentially automates your entire deployment mechanism. So, for example, for one of the projects that we develop, has two different servers. One's running a database, one's running a front end. We have client data that gets backed up, all this kind of stuff. Whenever we roll out a new code release, I literally type deploy, hit enter, and it does its thing. It updates all the server databases, gets everything in sync. It's really amazing. Like, seriously, what these guys do all day is sit around and say, how can I save developers time? Whereas, like, at Microsoft, that's not what they're sitting around saying. You know? That's not their priority. Whereas for Rails, literally, their number one priority and all the development that happens is web development that doesn't hurt, optimized for programmer happiness, beautiful code. And, you know, I think a lot of people laugh at these kind of, like, goals. Like, why would you build a development environment that's about happiness? But if you think about it, it's like, of course, that's exactly what we want. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I'm like such a, you could say, fanboy at this point of Rails. I wasn't always this way. I spent early part of 2006 talking about how Rails was no better than PHP. Now I think that is wrong. Anyway, so let's talk about it. Let's build a login page. Let's say we want to make it to only the owner of the blog can post stuff. All right, I'm going to show you kind of a less secure way to do this because I don't want to get into the topic of plugins right now, but Rails actually has a plugin called Access Authenticated, which does passwords in a very secure way, and it's super easy. I'm going to show you how to do it in an unsecure way, but you could drop this plugin in, and it would be really quick. You can Google that. So what we're going to do is we're just going to create a new model called User. I'm going to walk back over to my whiteboard full of models. We're just going to assume, you know, this is like a somewhat big blog and maybe there's more than one user. So users are going to have like a name and a password. I think that's good enough for now. So we're going to create a new model called User. And we are going to, and then again, the same thing, you come over here as you create your table called Users. Users have an ID, because everything has an ID. They have a username, and they have a password. It so happens that for everything, my username is always Kevin, and my password is always Fluffy. That's just true. It's not supposed to be funny. It's just true. Cool. So I'm just going to add that in. You could even go in and generate a controller. You know, to add and remove users. For now, we'll just add it this way. And what we want to be able to do is say, all right, if you are, you know, adding stuff, we want you to be logged in, right? So how are we going to do that? Rails has a concept of what's called a before filter. So this is essentially a function that gets run before every page. And here's what all we're going to do is we're going to check and say, is the user logged in? So before filter, check login. And I come down here and I just create my function called checkLogin. And what we're going to do is we're going to say if. So basically the idea is it maintains sessions for you, just like PHP. It creates this variable called session. You can stick anything in it that you want. We're going to say if session logged in is not equal to true, then we want to redirect this person to a login page. So one interesting thing you might see that I've been doing a lot is typing things with colons in front of them. In Ruby, for most practical purposes, this is the equivalent of a string. It's called a symbol. Basically, it's a string that you're never going to change the contents of, so it just does some optimizations inside Ruby to make it faster. But for all other purposes, that's just a string. So we say if the person is not logged in, we're going to redirect them to a page called login. If they are logged in, we're just going to do nothing and let them go straight to the page. So we'll create our action in our page called login right here. And then we need to create a login form. So I'll just copy the new page because new is pretty similar to login. And so the idea is the view is to just have the same name as other things. So like login to my blog. Do I want to show you guys Form 4 or not? Okay, check it out. Form 4. I don't. I want to just show. Have you guys learned about the input tag in HTML? Input type equals text. Name equals username. Okay. I'm just going to show you how to do it that way. Rails has some smart things that can automatically generate a form based on a user. I don't want to get too confusing at this point. These are kinds of things that you'll learn about in due time. Whatever. So we want to, you know, have username and password. So now we have a page called login. I hope. Oh, you know what? So I got an error from Firefox saying that I'm getting redirected a bunch of times. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this page. This is the error page you get in Firefox when it's just like every time you go to a page, it keeps redirecting you. Because I'm stupid, I had it redirect, but it's checking on every page. So when it gets to the login page, it's trying to redirect me back to the login page. So that's stupid. Accept login. So now it will not try to redirect me on that page. Cool. The button says create. That's just my bad. That should say login. Cool, so now we have a login page. We need to write some just like quick code to deal with that. We're just going to say if request.post, if params username. Oh, we created a users table. Awesome. All right, so that's the code you would use to write a login page. So one of the magic things that Rails does is it generates these things called dynamic finders, which is where it literally creates a function that lets you do find by and then anything in your model. So it actually creates on the fly these functions for anything you might want to search by. So if you wanted to do like post.findbyauthor or comment.findbybody or whatever, you can do that. This params array is literally just the parameters that get posted in from our form. Does that kind of make sense? Sort of. I mean, I know you guys aren't too familiar with the language, but this is literally like saying, all right, so what this literally generates is a SQL query that says select star from users where username equals this, password equals that. That's what it does on the inside, but we like to think this is much more readable. Yeah, so now we should be able to log in. Kevin, bad password. Oops, that was wrong. Kevin, fluffy. That worked. Now we're logged in. As you can see, I'm stupid. I should have made that a password input field, but it works the same way. Cool. So does that kind of make sense? I realize we should also be accepting the list page, because otherwise you'd have to be logged in to look at that. And then there's a plugin called Access Authenticated, which just plugs into your user model. And what that does is it encrypts the password in your database, because otherwise you have this database with passwords in it, and you don't really want that. But it's like super simple to plug it in. You literally just say, once you install the plugin, you literally just open up your model and say, acts as authenticated. Pretend I spelled that right, and then it would just do that encryption stuff for you. Does that kind of make sense? Does that kind of help you out? Yeah.
So you keep talking about these plugins.
Uh-huh.
Could you show us exactly how they work, like install one and just show us how they work?
No. No, I don't think that's probably the best thing I can show you. Because it's really, really simple. I will tell you how to do it. It's script/plugin install and then the name of the plugin. Mm-hmm. And it will just install that for you. So like that'll install access list. And it just literally installs it into your system for you. Access list is a way to make models work like a list. So if you wanted to have like a bunch of classes and they're in an order, there's also like access tree, which is if you have like things that are organized in a tree, it'll let you iterate them as a, you know, over as a tree, or you know, all kinds of other fun computer science stuff like set, nested set. I don't know. I kind of don't feel like I'm being helpful enough to you guys though, so I want to figure out. Yeah.
Screen scraping.
Yep.
Will using Ruby or Ruby on Rails help screen scraping something that was written conventionally?
Absolutely. So have you guys learned regular expressions yet? No. Okay. So screen scraping is actually incredibly easy to do with Rails. I will show you how to do it right now.
Thank you.
Let's create just a fun little, what do you guys want to scrape? What website? Do you know the URL for them or anything? Or?
I'm pretty sure if you just type translog into Google.
How do I spell that?
T-R-A-N-S-L-O-C.
Okay, well, let's scrape something fun. Let's scrape, like... The what? I'm not going to show you how to do that because I don't want the ad board coming after me. You should probably make sure that, like, I know some people that have gotten ad boarded for that. Yes. You should make sure that they're really protective of that data. Like there's actually a notice on there that says, like, you cannot scrape this, you will get ad boarded. So in general, like, screen scraping is not, it is like information that's on websites is published via copyright. So like, theoretically,
they ask them for permission.
If you have permission, that's fine, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, also, like, anything that's just generally being offered to the public is fine, but, you know, there's things like restrictions. Anyway, let's just still, like, do something cool. Like, let's scrape, yeah, that's cool. I was just thinking, how about if I Google, like, my name and scrape that? I don't know if that's a fun thing to do. I like how my MySpace comes up. That's fun. How hard is it to scrape Google? Oh, it's all ugly. What's cool? What can be scraped? What about Google News? I'm just looking for something that has relatively easy, like... Oh, this is all gross. How about Yahoo? What about CNN? Oh, this is good. This is easy. All right, cool. So we're just gonna scrape these news headlines from CNN.com, is what we want to try to do. All right. So Ruby supports. So like kind of in C, have you guys have done stuff with file input and output? You can like open up a file. Ruby is what it basically does is it lets you open URLs as if they were files. So you just pass in a URL as if you're opening up a file, and it will just go get it, and you can read it just like it's a file. So that's pretty cool. So we're just going to create a new kind of thing called, like, fun with scraping, or for short, F. Damn it. All right, cool. So we're just going to say, like, CNN content equals io.read CNN.com. And we will see if this works. So we're going to create our new file called F. And here we're going to say... I got this from CNN. These variables with an @ in front of them are called instance variables. That's how you pass stuff from the controller into the view. So I'm literally like in the controller, I'm doing all. The idea here is that you want to do all the like actions inside the controller and just pass the output to the view so it can get displayed. I could theoretically, like this would work. But it's considered bad Rails because views aren't really testable. You want to put all the stuff, like all the substantive stuff in the controller. So if we take a look at what I just did, no such file or directory, CNN.com. Uh-oh, do I not have it installed? File.read? Hold on 1 second. I am going to look it up. Give me 2 seconds. Sorry, I know how I can find this really quickly. And it's kind of embarrassing when you're doing one of these things and you can't, like...
In the PDF?
What? No, I'm looking it up in the source code for one of our applications, which is why I wanted to pull the little thing out, because I don't like the idea of people looking at the source code. Where is that? Oh, it's just open. Okay. Oh, that's cool. All right. By the way, I've just been staring at my screen because this is like normal resolution and my screen's widescreen. It converted my screen to like stretched out. It's really hurting my eyes. Anyway, cool, whatever. All right, so turns out I'm stupid. So we say open. What? No such file or directory, httpcnn.com. Do I not have something on? Do I have to do something special here? Sorry, give me 1 second. See, so my not knowing this is being recorded on the camera for posterity. And I think that's awesome. So is this kind of being helpful? I don't really know. I hope it's helpful. You don't have to just say it just to like make me happy. Really? I mean, I'll just take your word for it.
So do you save time when something else loses out? Like,
what?
I said, do you save time in development but lose out on something else like optimization or file size?
Yes. Rails is slow. If you compare Rails to like Java servlets, it's slower. It's a good, you might say, factor of 3 slower, depending on who's measuring. But the reality of it is that the most scarce resource by far is developer time. You know, if you ever have a situation, right, where your application needs 30 servers instead of 10, that means that you're popular enough to need 10 servers, which means that, like, you're wildly successful. So at that point, like, who cares? There are some people that'll debate that. I mean, have you guys heard of Twitter? Twitter is this kind of weird, like, pseudo text message blogging system where you like can post to it from text messages or from websites. The idea is like you post like short little updates about yourself all the time. They use Rails. They freaked out when Twitter started getting like huge. And we're crying, like, we've got to get off of Rails. It was awful. Turns out they made it work just fine. They scaled it just fine, you know. They did end up spending a little extra money in scaling, but at the same time, had they started out with Java, they might never have had a product. So that's kind of my view on it. Different people have different views on it. I've found it scales just fine. But, like, seriously, though, if you, like, take an Apache benchmark against it, it is slower. A lot of that is Ruby itself. Ruby itself is slow. It is interpreted, but it's also slow. Like, part of, like, the downside of having this, like, beautiful syntax and, like, 50 different ways to call functions and all this kind of stuff is that something has to figure out what you mean, and that's where you lose a little time. Like, Ruby is objectively a little slower than Python. It's a little slower than Perl, a little slower than PHP. But people are working on it. Ruby 2.0 comes out soon, and it's going to be, like, faster. Anyway, so I figured out what I did stupidly. Require open URI. Let you open websites. Cool. So we now have our CNN. We're pulling that in. So that was our website, literally just grabbed CNN.com and shoved it into the content. But what we want to do is something fancier, right? Which is like actually we want to parse out these headlines. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to figure out how does CNN format these things, right? Well, they have this little thing called CNN More News Bin. I don't know what that means. They've created some sort of little style sheet. But we're just going to rip that off and we're going to find these things and we're going to use them, right? Cool. So you guys know nothing about regular expressions. You're about to get a tutorial on regular expressions. That's cool. And specifically the way that Ruby, you know what? Maybe I'll show you without regular expressions because I don't want to blow your minds right now. Regular expressions are really cool, and you should read a tutorial about them eventually. But what I'm actually going to do is do a split.
Cool. What if you just give us an example of a regular expression, and we can see if we really know what it is?
Okay, cool. So
we may very well.
I mean, I think you would have heard of it. The idea is you want to like do a search, and so essentially what we're searching for is we're searching for that beginning, this end, and then on the inside, we're looking for anything except the word div, followed by the word div. Like, so that's kind of like an example of a regular expression. I don't know, have you guys, I mean, like, it's one of those things you should read about eventually. I want to show you a simpler way of doing it, though, just because in this case, I'm just going to split on this little string right here. So what this is going to do is, so let me show you just one quick resource. If you go to rubydoc.org, this is Ruby documentation. I'm going to include this in my list of links. But this contains the important stuff. It's all the documentation. In this case, I'm looking at string. Because I actually want to just look this up, but there's a string split. String split function, which actually split is not what I want, is it? No, it is. It's exactly what I want. Okay, cool. So I'm going to split on this little string, this div class, more news bin. So what that's going to do is it's going to take this thing and it's going to divide it up into an array of the stuff that falls in between these. Well, no, it's going to take it, it's going to say, so like what split does is it's like if you have, you had like this, you had like 1, comma 2, comma 3, comma 4, and you did split on comma, it would give you an array with 1, 2, 3, 4. If you did split on, right, so I'm splitting on that thing that it looks like they're sticking in between their links. Screen scraping is kind of hard because it's kind of like, you have to kind of like sneakily engineer a way to get what you want from a page. That was clearly not designed to be screen scraped, right? So you have sometimes to be a little more sneaky. That's why I was intentionally looking for a website that would be kind of easy. A cool thing about Ruby is that like some people make their data available in like XML format. Ruby can read that natively. If they make it available in any sort of other like reasonable format, like CSV, it has native parsing for that. Oh, really? Yeah. So that's cool. Oh, you guys are doing the Yahoo stock thing, right? It's astounding to me how many like there are actually like legitimate traders that use that Yahoo CSV data feed like to run automatic trading. Just thought you might want to know that. All right, so this is like our array of lines kind of we're just splitting it on that and what we Let's just, like, for a test, let's just say that we're going to just set our CNN content to the first element in the array just to see what that looks like. All right, cool. So there we have our first, news thing. We have the U.S., and then we have that headline and that second headline. So if we wanted, we could further parse this and, split and get this URL or split and get this image or whatever, right? So that's just showing you the one. We're going to want to actually show you all of them, right? So let's, say that. Let's actually just export that array of lines. we're going to say, and this is actually back to the whole page because we didn't throw out the first and last one, which we do need to do, right? Because otherwise that content is still in there. So we can just do some little trick to, if I'm thinking about this right. Nope, I did it wrong. So anyway, there's like a little function that lets you throw away the first element array and a function that lets you throw away the last element in the array, and you just do it, and that would be what you use. So the actual like scraping, like the actual like hard part, right, which is like getting the contents, is reduced to like one line. And that's pretty cool. And you know, you guys could then do anything you want with it. Like you could take that and throw it into a database, or you could... yeah. So does anybody else have any like more like kind of how-to type questions or yeah, what's up?
If you wanted to create something that updates itself, like calendar or even something time-oriented.
What do you mean? Like you're talking about actually like to look at the view, like to display a calendar or?
Yeah.
Well, a calendar is notoriously difficult to make because you have to account for all kinds of crazy things. I think I've written the calendar code so many times. But like, just like, let's just do an example. Let's do a weekly calendar, right? That just shows a week at a time, because that's kind of easier. You know, let's just try this. Let's just comment out our CNN crap. And then... so you guys learned like the HTML table tag. So we'll just create our little HTML table here that has... Why is this doing a crappy job of indenting? So we'll just create, you know, you can create your header row manually. Sunday. Well, I don't like really know what you're trying to create, but let's just create a monthly calendar. What's the right way to do this? Yeah, this is legitimate Ruby syntax. It's kind of funny. So this is going to create a column for every like day of the week, right? What? So day. You know what you really probably want is something more like this. We use a 6-day week where I come from. What? Oops. Dot each. What? Man. I should stop doing these interactive things. Anyway, there you have your little like table. If you wanted to do like rows going down, you could literally just wrap this inside another loop that loops and does a row.
Let's say it's Monday and you want today is Monday.
Okay.
And you want if today is Monday, you want the first day to be Monday, or you want them all to shift over.
All right, that's legitimate.
That's something that updates based on what it is.
Sure. The way that I would probably do that, like, in all reality, is I would write some sort of function that says, that figures out what day it is, and then shifts the array. I don't really want to do that right now. You guys could definitely, you could definitely do it. Right. Yep. Time dot now. Yeah. I think you can also do date dot now. I think just gives you the date. Time dot now gives you the entire date and time. Yeah. I think you could actually do, let's just see, the current day is time.now.stirrifTime percent, I think it's A. Current day is Thursday. Yep. So you could just use that to check and then based on that, like, rotate your array. I don't really want to do that right now. I'd rather talk about stuff that's more database associated with, like more, because I feel like that's probably more what's going to be helpful to you guys. Like at this point, from what you've seen, it's something that you're interested in still learning more on. Like, I'm not sure, like, at this point. Yeah, cool. What's up?
About the rotating array, does it let you just rotate the array and not worry about manually grabbing the last one and putting it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's an array.shift. I'm not, like, super familiar with every possible function, which is why I always come back to this. Yeah, you can... Wait, that's... Right. Well, there should be a way to just cycle it. There's so many functions in Ruby that I almost guarantee you there's a function that does what we want. It's a matter of just finding it.
What's with the things
with the... These? Oh, okay, cool. So this is another, like, convention thing. One of the conventions is if you ever write a function that's asking a question, like, instead of calling the function name, like, is this frozen, or is this a string, or is this, you know, product for sale, the convention is just you say, like, for sale, question mark, or frozen, question mark.
So what about exclamation point, then?
Exclamation point is a convention to mean destructive. So, for example, if you did, like, if you were doing, like, a replace, let's say you have string replace, you do string.replace, and you want to replace, you know, my name, say you have a string Kevin, and you want to replace K with D, so it turns into Devin. If you do string.replace KD, that just returns a string with it replaced, but if you do replace exclamation point, it returns the replaced string, and it makes that one be the new replaced version too. Does that kind of make sense? And so the way this is used in Rails too. So if you have like user.create regular, and you pass in some sort of invalid stuff, like say you forgot to use the subject, it'll return an error. But if you do user.create exclamation point, then it'll actually throw an exception. And you guys haven't learned about exceptions yet, have you? Exceptions are really, really awesome. We should talk about exceptions because you're going to see them. So in C, you typically find that your programs, you know, they probably yell at you in CS50 about, like, error handling. Like, you know, try to open a file, and then you got to, like, check to see if the file is actually opened. Or, like, you're doing your malloc, and you got to check to make sure the malloc didn't fail. Ruby does away with all of that through a concept called exceptions, which actually exists in C++ and almost every other language. But the idea is, if anything bad happens, it does what's called throwing an exception, which just stops executing your code and just shows the error. You can then catch the exception if you want to deal with it some other way. But what it means is that you never have to write error handling code, like make sure this malloc worked or make sure this file opened. And that's awesome. That's about all. But like every time I've gotten an error on this page, that's basically what it was. It was an exception, and it just stopped running at that point, as opposed to continuing to run.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a website and it's pretty static.
Okay.
Maybe it is pretty dynamic with database and everything. What about switching to Rails? Like if it's just you've got some MySQL databases, you've got some HTML files.
Yep.
How hard is it to, could you just drag your HTML files and replace stuff?
You can drag your HTML files right into that public directory if they're static. Uh-huh. It'll just serve those up normally. Well, so there's a couple ways to go about doing this. Are you concerned with maintaining?
I don't have anything in mind.
Okay. Basically, Rails has conventions, right? And so, like, they have a lot of, like, conventions with regard to the database, such as the ID column is called ID. It's not called capital ID. It's not called post ID. It's called ID, right? So if your tables are still being accessed by something else and they're not following the convention,
yeah,
then you can, like, hack Rails to use your naming scheme. But there are ways to do that. Like, there are commands you can run and say, okay, well, actually, the ID column is called this. And you can do that. What would be better is if you just rename the column. And so, like, as far as transferring that kind of stuff over, that's really easy. Transferring the logic over is, you know, it's not that hard. It's pretty straightforward. Everything maps fairly over, fairly well. I don't know if that was a reasonable answer. Like, what you run into problems with, I led a failed effort last year to have a website that was halfway built in Rails and half built in PHP, and I built this elaborate go-between agent that shares the session data and shares all the cookies and that kind of stuff. And we did end up getting it working, but it wasn't worth it. So, I wouldn't recommend converting to Rails just for the sake of converting to Rails if you already have an application. But if you're building a new application, I think it's a pretty good idea to use. The other thing is, like, Rails is clearly not for static websites. It's all about database, dynamic, cool stuff. You could build a static website with it, but you're not really reaping any of its advantages. Yeah. What else? How else can I help you guys? So you guys know, like, you guys saw the CSS stuff. And that was all straightforward. That's the same as normal. Let's talk about one other cool thing. Well, what didn't we get to? Let's go back to the presentation. Oops, where did my presentation go? What? Yeah. Hey, guys, I'm just going to throw it out to you guys. Do you have anything? Yep.
Can you write sort of applications that are standalone or as an interpreter?
Absolutely. You can't build EXEs with it, if that's what you're asking. You have to package it with a Ruby interpreter. That's getting a lot easier. Ruby comes now standard on every Mac, which is awesome. Rails comes on, you know, Leopard and up. It's by default installed in some Linux installations. It's very simple to install on other Linux installations, and there's a one-click installer for Windows. So it's not super hard, but it's not, like, you can't compile it down to an EXE.
If we have a choice, does it matter which OS we use?
For Ruby purposes, no. For general life, you should always use a Mac. That's correct. You can compile Java down into, like, compiled Java bytecode, and then you have to have the Java interpreter running on that machine. In fact, the new version of Ruby is going to work very much the same as Java, where it actually gets compiled down to, like, a compiled Ruby bytecode that then gets interpreted. But that's kind of not important to the conversation. They're very little. So basically, Pylons is a very similar system. It got all of its ideas from Rails. It started after Rails. There's some fundamental design differences between the two. Basically, Pylons said, you know, we want to leverage components that are already existing in Python that people already know how to use. So Python already has its own kind of, like, URL rewriting routing system, and Pylons uses that. Whereas Rails kind of built it from scratch. Python already has its own, like, kind of database interaction system, and Pylons uses that. I haven't really used it. I like to shy away from this question because I think they're both probably far better than anything else that exists. I think Python is a good language. I don't have anything against it. I think a lot of people do really amazing things with it, and it's fantastic. It's very, very, very similar to Ruby. It's almost like, it's kind of like arguing between like Barack Obama and John Edwards. It's like they're so similar. I don't want to like, it's kind of stupid to come down like hardcore on one side and hate the other one. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, there's like some superficial differences like at some level, and like at some level you can take a side. But like fundamentally, like you should be happy that you're that the other person is supporting at least something that's pretty close. So that's kind of how I feel about that. Having never actually used it, I'm not that qualified. I will say that I've spoken to people that feel very strongly that Python is better than Ruby. I've spoken to people that feel very strongly the other way. I think it comes down to personal preference. There are a lot of Python things that Ruby is seeking to copy. There are a lot of Ruby things that Python is seeking to copy. So I suspect they'll converge into a very similar language as time passes. One of the things Python does that I love, though, is that it enforces that you only indent using two spaces. Because it frustrates me when people either indent wrongly or indent with something like eight spaces. But, yeah, did you have something? Sorry. Right.
Can you integrate Ruby on Rails with whatever?
What do you mean by integrate?
If you want to add new components to an existing website, or change something, mostly just add things.
Is your existing website like database driven and dynamic and all kinds of stuff like that? Is it just static like content, or is it like you can register and you can? Well, if it's just content, you can stick the content in just. No problem. So Ruby is really about developing like dynamic applications that are hitting databases and building websites on the fly. And that's kind of what it's meant for. So I guess we're going to wrap this up. I hope you guys found this helpful. Please send me like feedback and let me know how I can be better at presenting. I apologize for kind of being all over the place. I didn't really know the right way to do something like this, given that you have like an incredible variety of backgrounds. I hope that we kind of, struck a balance in the middle somewhere. But I still appreciate your feedback. You can be honest if your feedback is like, this was a waste of my 2 hours. That's really important feedback, and I hope that I get that too. So I look forward to that. I'm around. I'm happy to help you guys out on anything. If you guys have questions, if you guys, want... Like, I'm not a TF, I'm not on the core staff, so I don't get paid by this stuff. So for that, like, I'm not going to do your project for you. I'm not going to, like, sit down with you for more than 10 minutes. But, if you have a question and you want to email it to me, I'm happy to field it, I hope that you use it. I hope at least some of you guys use it. My friend Matt Blake is also an interesting resource. You can throw questions his way. If you guys, learn this and get good and you want a summer job... always hiring. You need to be good, but that's cool. That's in New York, by the way. So one of the things I'm really excited about graduating is my company, we're working on getting this New York office, and we're about to get this office right on the corner of 34th and 9th. I don't know if you guys know where that is, but it's right by Penn Station. It's really sweet. We're really excited. It's on the 17th floor. It has a roof deck. It's cool stuff. So if you guys get good, there's always opportunities there. Thanks. I hope that was helpful.
Thank you.
App when you have a screen this small, but it's a system for people who build out websites. It's actually kind of funny. Backlot is a system for people who build out websites. I'll just go ahead and show you one simple example. It's a way to let people edit websites in a very intelligent, intuitive way. So this is a restaurant that we built out a website for. And this is in New York. They're at 145 Broadway. And they have these menus right? Where, and they change their menus all the time. So what Backlot actually lets you do is once you log into Backlot and you're on your website, you can click on anything that is like a design, like a content element, click on it, it turns into an edit box, and then you can like, you know, say, yeah, you can say like with special or whatever, you know, and then you hit save, and then the website gets saved in real time. So that's what our product Backlot does. It's pretty sweet. This is not the subject of this, you know, talk, but if you guys ever build websites for other people and you want to have a really easy way for them to edit it, there's a product called Backlot. It costs $20 a month. It's pretty awesome.
Do they sign up for a membership?
Yeah, well, the way that it works, it includes website hosting. We host your website and we provide you with a service, like the Backlot. The way this is actually implemented, I don't want to like go too deep into it, but I'll show you the source code of this page. We actually created like special HTML tags that let you say like this is an editable area. It's like BL text. You surround that around a text area, it lets it be editable. I don't want to show you, but we also do these like Backlot training things all the time. So if it's something you're interested in, like send me an email. I'll make sure you get an invite to the next Backlot training. Which is where I spend about 30 minutes, show you how to use this, and then you can use it. There's also a video training I'm happy to send you. It's literally like 30 minutes, and then you can get up and running, and you can do this, and it's really cool.
So someone could build a website for somebody else and say, go host it by Backlot.
Yep.
And then they'd be set up to go.
Refer them to you.
Yeah, well, it's great. I mean,
you can go in and edit it themselves and not have to come back to you.
Exactly. That's awesome, right? You know, like if like before, like the guy, the designer who built this, like they were coming back to him all the time and saying, change this price. And he was like, you know, getting driven crazy. So, you know, and you know, it supports some like really, really cool things. Like here's another website that uses Backlot. It supports like all kinds of like images and MP3s and video, supports video, support has e-commerce capabilities. You know, like these guys built out like a really ridiculous website that has music, you know, has like images, the way like all these images get updated through Backlot. Anyway, whatever, it's cool stuff. Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
People at home, we love you.